Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
I was just thinking, when Peter was playing One Power, Peter and Patrick are the two musicians we have who start with that. We used to start with it all the time over at Woodruff, for those of you who were there some years ago. But that song, we only sing the first and third verse. They do because we had to shorten it because it was the opening and that kind of stuff. But there's a really beautiful middle verse to that. In some way, someday we'll have Peter or Patrick sing it. And the lyrics to the middle verse really kind of apply to today. It says, we speak so many languages, different clothings, different colors, different names, but different is only dangerous when we forget that in our hearts we're all the same. But remember, once we close our eyes to see, that such distances were never meant to be. So beautiful words. Daniel Namod, one of the best writers in the New Thought community right now. This idea that we all share that really touches on what I'm talking about today. This week, as we know, is a very significant one for many of the major world religions, actually. We've got the Jewish celebration of Passover, which started last Monday and goes until this Tuesday evening. We've got in the Christian tradition, obviously, today is Easter Sunday and the end of what is referred to as the Holy Week. And if you get even broader, a week from Monday is the celebration in Islam. I know a few of you were raised either Islam or Sufi. It's the ascension of the prophet into heaven. So it's a real big time, as Ursula was saying, for a lot of the world's religions. But I want to focus today mostly on Passover and Easter. Now, in terms of the religious significance, each one of these celebrations, both of these stories, very beautiful and very dramatic in their own way, represents what could be called the key event in the development of these two spiritual traditions. Passover, you may recall, symbolizes the escape from slavery in Egypt, where they put the blood on the door and the angel of death passed over the firstborn children of the Jews. And if they had not escaped from slavery, then the Jewish nation would never have been formed. And the resurrection of Jesus, we are told, is the cornerstone of Christianity, because their teachings say that symbolizes the triumph of God over death. Those are sort of the party line definitions. And I'm going to talk about those stories, events a little bit in a few minutes. But first, I want to talk about how both these stories relate to you and me, whether or not we consider ourselves to be either Jewish or Christian. Because the things that we teach here on Sunday morning and in our classes here in the teaching of the science of mind come from a much broader and a much more spiritually panoramic tradition. All right, sort of a much more open tradition. Because this teaching honors all spiritual paths, which we do, those of us who come here sometimes find ourselves facing kind of a spiritual dilemma on holidays or holy days. That's where the word holiday came from, like these. Now, we don't celebrate Easter or Passover in the traditional sense in this teaching, but for many of us who come here, they're still part of our culture. They're still part of our past. For one thing, we may have a lot of personal history wrapped up in one of these traditions. I remember going to Easter sunrise services. Anybody else? Down in Safety Harbor, Florida at Espiritu Santo Catholic Church, where my mother is right this very moment. Okay. She's actually the head usher at the 7 o'clock a.m. service. She will turn 90 years old this year, and she's sharp as a razor and mean as a snake. That's my mom. Thanks for the jeans, Mom, if you're listening. Anyway. We may have strong memories of getting together with our family and praying together. Maybe we participated in traditional Passover Seders. How many people went to a Seder this past week? Okay, number of you. That's wonderful. These are meals where families and friends get together, and the traditions of the Jewish faith are handed down both in Hebrew and in English. But here's what we should be focusing on. This time of year, and Ursula mentioned this, covered it very well, springtime is a time rich in religious symbolism going back thousands upon thousands of years. And even if our own spiritual viewpoint has changed, we feel like we have evolved a little bit out of the traditional stuff, we still may feel a little bit of a twinge when we try to ignore it, which actually makes perfect sense. You see, a major reason why many of us began to be attracted to New Thought teachings like this one in the first place was because the symbols and the dogma and the rituals and the traditions and the stories of our old childhood beliefs seemed to be getting in the way of our personal search for what God is and what we are. Right? That's why I got into this, you know, which is really what religion, so to speak, or spirituality should be all about. You could even say that at some point our religions started getting in the way of our spirituality. That's what happened, okay? And as a result, we became a little more disillusioned, in some cases even resentful, when we realized that the symbols and the stories of our childhood religion had become more important than the spiritual truths they were supposed to represent. In fact, in some cases, people had completely forgotten what the symbols of religion they were using every week had originally stood for. There's a very famous Unity minister, died about 7 or 8 years ago, Eric Butterworth. Many of you have heard of him. Wonderful man. He had the Unity Church in New York City. And he pointed out in one of his talks that very few people who are singing and praying in their beautiful churches and cathedrals even think about the idea that the altar up there, that is the center of everything that's going on, started out as a butcher block for sacrifices. They don't even think of that. They just look at it and just go along with what's going on. Now, this isn't just a religious thing. It's actually part of human nature. Even in what we call the secular world or the non-spiritual world, most people have a tendency to glorify a statue, for example, or a monument, and forget about what the person that it honors, that it was built for, was really, really like. Or here's one I love. We pass laws protecting the flag, even punishing people and putting them in jail if they break those laws, completely forgetting that the reason for the flag is to symbolize freedom and tolerance. It's very crazy when you think about it. Now, some people do the same thing with a Christian symbol of the cross or any of the other symbols from traditional religion. But that's the real warning. That's the real meaning behind the commandment that tells us to beware of worshiping false gods. It's not worshiping the wrong God or somebody else's God. It's making the power of God the symbol instead of what it is. It's sort of like the Buddhists say, the Buddhists have a great saying. It says you have to remember that the finger pointing at the moon is not the moon. Sounds a little funny, but it's a very profound statement. That's what many of our most basic spiritual truths have done. They've become hidden by the stories or the beliefs or the objects that were supposed to represent them. Now, on the other hand, these same symbols and sacred stories can serve a very valuable purpose. Remember last month I talked about creation stories? Some of you were here. Every religion, every church has one. If we use all these stories, whether it's the creation story, the Easter story, the Passover story, whatever it is, intelligently, and by that I mean if we remember what they really mean, then they can help instill in us a greater emotional or spiritual connection with the God of our understanding. That's what they do. They can help to keep us focused on a specific state of mind, sort of like a mantra does when you're meditating, or maybe like the watch a hypnotist uses to try to hold your attention. But we have to be very careful to look beyond the story, to look beyond the symbols, to the underlying truths that they represent, because otherwise we'll end up, this kind of came into my mind when I was writing this, we'll end up like a person who dresses up and goes to a fancy restaurant and eats the menu instead of the meal. That's kind of what we end up with. I mean, the menu lists the food in great detail. It may even have pictures on it. It's the way we get the meal, but it's not the meal. It just represents it. That's sort of the same way we do with these symbols. Now, this is especially relevant when we are dealing with universal spiritual truths. The truth itself is always greater than any effort made to describe it. Let me say that again. The truth itself is always greater than any symbol or any story used to describe it. No book describing health or prosperity can give us health or prosperity. All right, that's an application now. No seminar discussing love can bring us love. I've talked to people in the past who said, I've been every prosperity seminar in the world and I'm still not prosperous. And it's, well, what are you doing with it? Okay, same thing with relationship seminars. If we want to create an experience in our life, we have to be open to the deepest truth of it. That's first. We have to embrace the deepest truth of it or embody it. I love that word. And we have to live the truth of it. We have to live the truth of it. Any truly spiritual story should help us do all of those things and more. Which brings me back for a couple minutes here to the events that are being celebrated this week. What is the fundamental spiritual truth that we should all be celebrating this week? Because there's got to be something. I mean, this has been around for thousands of years. During this time of year, the spring equinox, which was, what, the 20th of March, I think, last month, there are all sorts of stories and symbols and myths going back in written history. But no matter what the different stories are, from the oldest pagan myths to the most recent stories, the Easter Passover stories that we're familiar with, they all tell us the same thing. They all tell us the same thing. They all celebrate the awakening of the spirit of life, all of life, from the appearance of death. That's what they tell us. Now, it's no coincidence that these celebrations happen during the time of year when we're going from the dark and the cold and the long days into the warmth and the sun and drinking beer on a patio and all that kind of stuff we like to do when it starts getting warm again. That's why all these pagan fertility festivals are so popular this time of year. In fact, I mentioned this most years, but some of you haven't been here that long. Easter was named after a Saxon fertility goddess by the name of Easter, and her sacred symbol was what? The rabbit. Where do you think we got the Easter bunny? Okay, so bring that up to somebody who's, you know, talking to you about that. What do these things mean? Every religious tradition has the same idea somehow in their story. Now, Passover represents the Hebrews' escape from the darkness and the bondage of slavery into the light of freedom and independence. That's where it is. And what we call Easter is about the ultimate power of all of life, not just the life of one particular person, and this is where we part paths with a number of different Christian teachings. This is where we symbolize the power of all life, okay, to overcome the power of death. Joseph Campbell, the mythologist, said the central truth of Easter and Passover are the same. They both show us being called out of our bondage to our old traditions. Not out of bondage to death, bondage to our old traditions. In other words, these stories celebrate the natural urge, something we are born with as our spiritual birthright, all right, the God in us, if you want to call it that, that refuses to be held back by our old fears and beliefs, whether those beliefs are in death or slavery or addiction or loneliness or lack or limitation or sickness or anything else or any other negative idea that goes against the natural joyful expression of life. What comes up in us during this season that brought these celebrations about was the natural, spiritual, slash human idea of life telling us that anytime we want, we can transcend any difficulty in our life, no matter how bad it appears to be. Anytime we're ready, we can let the old me die, knowing that a new me is ready to step forward out of the tomb of our old beliefs as soon as the stone that symbolizes our fear is rolled away, using the words of that story. So here's where the misunderstanding comes from here with some of this. The resurrection that's celebrated on Easter Sunday is not a literal story about God overcoming death. It's not. Because a story about a God who overcomes death isn't that big a deal. I mean, look back in all the mythology. Any real God should be able to overcome death with his hands tied behind his back like a superhero. You know? It makes perfect sense. So if we see Easter as the story of a powerful being who rolled back a big stone and walked out of a tomb, that may be impressive, but if all we can do is watch and worship, it doesn't do anything to help us grow. It doesn't do anything to help us grow. Now, why is this important? Because if it's a demonstration of a universal truth, as all spiritual stories are supposed to be, there has to be something here that we can learn. There has to be a law we can apply. There has to be a truth that we can actually use. In other words, if we see the story as showing us the ability of the world and the ability of all of us in it to renew ourselves in the face of any obstacle and to transform ourselves, then that's something to get excited about. It really, really is. So we have to see the Easter story as part of our mythology. And some people are insulted by that, but that doesn't minimize the story. In fact, it makes it more powerful for everyone. For everyone, not just those of a certain religion. Because instead of a supernatural story about a Christian God, it then becomes a spiritually inspired lesson that applies to everyone, no matter what your religion happens to be. It becomes something that we can use in our daily life to grow and evolve mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. You see, that's the kind of lessons that we're here to learn. We really are. And every spiritual tradition does that. So we believe that the teacher Jesus, as we refer to him, was not the great exception. We believe that he was the great example. He was a person who understood this stuff at a deep, deep level. In fact, that's the message he repeated over and over again, because he told us over and over again the same things. His words are very, very clear. He said, "The Father in me is doing the work. And the Father in you is doing the work too." He said, "Greater things than this you shall do." He even said, if you go into the Gnostic Bible, "Don't you know that you are gods?" He said these things. These are not in the translations that some people have, but they're in all the original works. Now, there's really nothing wrong with all the stories that have been handed down if we look to those stories for inspiration instead of information. You get the difference? It's a big difference. These stories, every one of them, have all been through countless translations. All these stories have been altered unintentionally by changes in language, by changes through word of mouth. And some of them have been altered intentionally through political manipulation through the years. They have been, and they continue to be. That's why these stories are no longer relevant as historical references to actual events. So as we read these stories and we think about our spirituality, we should be asking questions like, how does this story apply today in dealing with other people to make the world a better place? We should be asking questions like, how can we use these teachings to bring more love and peace and harmony to the world instead of war and division, which religion seems to be bringing to us right now? We need to ask the question, what do our beliefs have in common with other people? Those kind of questions. That's what we need to ask. I mean, if we look at the Middle East today, or Africa, or Russia, or Europe, the United States, you can sort of run down the list if you go through it. It shows us that we have got to figure this out. We have got to figure this out. The physical and the historical details of stories like these are just not that important. They aren't. In fact, it doesn't really matter if they happened at all. What's the message that we need to hear? What's the truth that we need to understand? What's the lesson that we need to learn? In the end, that's all that's really important. Now, every culture, every tradition, whatever, has resurrection stories somewhere in their mythology. Greek, Roman, all the way up, Western, Eastern, all of that, okay? They all have stories where someone who was dead came back to life. Every single one of them. Now, sometimes it was a god, sometimes it was a hero, but it was all the same lesson. It's not just a Christian concept. This is what the Buddha told us. This is what the Quran says. This is what the Vedas of Hinduism talk about, which was 2,000 years before the others. It said, we need to die to the false beliefs of the world before we can awaken to the mental and spiritual world. We need to die to the false beliefs of the physical world before we can awaken to the spiritual world. Now, that doesn't mean we have to physically die. It just means that we need to die to our old way of thinking. It means we need to resurrect ourselves to a new and a higher consciousness. The point that we have to realize is all of these beautiful and powerful stories refer to the resurrection of the spirit, not the resurrection of the physical body. They all tell us we overcome death not by rising from the dead, but by not being afraid of it. By not being afraid of it, by recognizing that it's simply a part of the natural progression of life. And though we may not know what happens after we die, once again, there's a lot of theories. They call them religions, okay? What appears to make the most sense is that death is not the end. That makes the most sense, that death is a new beginning. It's a transition from this life to the next. Now, let's really get down to the nitty-gritty. On a more everyday level, kind of a mundane level, these stories apply to other parts of life. For example, we've all heard stories, and many of us know people who were lost to alcohol or drug addiction or other kinds of addiction. It's no stretch to say that these people were spiritually dead. True? Anybody know someone like this? We all have, okay? Even some of you have been through this. But with some very conscious and deliberate mental and spiritual work, and with the help of friends and maybe family, and maybe a good 12-step program for a lot of them, they tapped into the divine wisdom within them, what some of the 12-step programs call their higher power, and they raised themselves back up to a level of life they thought they would never see again. That is a resurrection. It really is. There have been relationships between parents and children, between friends or between siblings or between lovers or spouses that all but died because both sides forgot what was important. They all but died because they got lost in some past, trivial, totally unimportant agreement. But once the love was restored, once the love was remembered, never had to be restored because it never left, but once it was remembered, the relationship came alive again. That is a resurrection. And we've all had times in our life, Peter's song talked about this, when we felt disconnected from the spiritual, disconnected from God, and we didn't see any way out. Now, because we did get out, we realized there was a way out. We just couldn't see it at the time. And the reason we couldn't see the way out at the time was because we had stopped believing in a power greater than ourselves that we could use to renew our life, as Paul says in the Bible, not me, the other guy, Paul, he says, to renew ourselves by the renewing of our mind, by the renewing of our spirit, by the renewing of our consciousness. When we finally raised our consciousness to that level, what happened next, the way out, that was a resurrection. That was a resurrection. Remember the story of Lazarus? Most of us sort of know this peripherally. He was the guy that Jesus raised. That's a resurrection story a lot of people forget about. But it makes the same point, and it raises some interesting issues. As the story goes, let me refresh your memory. Jesus got the word, he was quite a ways away, that his close friend Lazarus was dying, had an illness. But instead of dropping everything and going there, it says in the translation that he waited 2 more days before he started traveling. So by the time he got there, Lazarus had been dead for 4 days. Now, there's a reason this was in the story. Because in the Jewish tradition at the time, the rule was that no one was officially dead until he or she had been dead at least 3 days. They believed that a person's life force hung around for a few days before it decided to go, before it took off for the afterlife. So after 3 days, nothing could revive a dead person except an act of God. So as far as the world was concerned, Lazarus was beyond help. He was totally gone. His 2 sisters, said, "I wish you had gotten here sooner." Anyway, the story goes, Jesus showed up and he walked up to the tomb and he said, "Take away the stone, Lazarus, come out." All right? He didn't say, "Let me try this and see if it works." Okay? Okay? He said, "Do it." All right? Because he knew what was possible. And what the world believed was impossible made no difference to him at all. Now, even when he did this, before the actual result, people tried to talk him out of it. Lazarus' sister, Martha, I think it was, said she thought this might not be a real good idea on account of the smell and all that kind of stuff. She tried to talk him. But they rolled away the stone, and as we are told, out walked Lazarus. Stumbled, but he got it back a little bit later, okay? Now, no one really knows if this actually happened or not. Nothing was written. There were no cameras, no cell phones, nothing. But the message here is this, okay? A clear and deliberate consciousness can always overcome the worst the world has to offer. That's the message. That's the message. No matter how irreversible it seems. And it can happen in ways that the world does not believe is possible. That's the fun part to me. We're never too far gone for God, for the divine consciousness in us to bring us back. Now, we need the messages that these stories teach us. That's how we learn to keep ourselves balanced, spiritually balanced. We have a tendency to not only buy into the world's beliefs about things like poverty and limitation and disease and war, we're also far too quick to accept these things as normal, as just the way things are. That's the attitude too much of the world has been living under for way too long. We get so used to reading and hearing about terrorist attacks and murders and bankruptcies and wars and recessions that we don't even ask ourselves, why are we doing this? Why are we creating these things in what's supposed to be a peaceful, loving, and abundant universe? A mental and spiritual resurrection, like these stories describe, would allow us to let those old beliefs in what we think is natural die and roll away the stones so we can walk out into the light of a greater truth. That is the deeper meaning, the real valuable meaning of the stories we celebrate this week. That is an example of what we need to learn from the wisdom of the ages, which is constantly being given to us. We just don't accept it. We just don't accept it. It's constantly being handed to us, no matter what our religion or what our particular childhood story happens to be. But to paraphrase Sergeant Joe Friday on Dragnet, everybody remember that? Remember what he used? I know some of you aren't old enough. Many of you are. Where he said, there are 7 million stories in the big city. This is one of them. That's how he started it, right? Well, there are several million stories in the big city, but there's only one God. There's only one power. One power. And right here, right now, in this world, in this time, where we are, through you and me is how that power shows up in the world. So I wish all of you a happy Easter, a happy Passover, and a happy spring equinox, if that's what, you know, blows your skirt up. And remember, this is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is, and so it is. Thank you. All right. Thank you. All right, let's take a moment. Maybe these are new ideas to you. Maybe you've been hearing these and believe in them, have heard them for years. But let's just know this, that the ideas that raise themselves in our mind, in our heart, are a precious gift. They are the gift of life showing us what we can do. And the most valuable ideas are those that support our growth, our openness, our self-awareness, and our ability to love. We have been given the power to see the world in the best possible way, but we have to use it. We have been given the power to make the very best decisions, but we have to make them. We have been given the power to love anyone, but we have to take the time and the effort to love them. All of these gifts have been given to us, but our ability to actually use them is our gift to God, our gift back to life. So I know that during this time, when the world is reawakening once more, as it has for millions upon millions of years, that the awakening around me should show me that there can be an awakening within me. And in that awakening, my eyes get clearer, my hearing gets better, my heart gets stronger, and my awareness gets deeper. And that allows me to become the most powerful spiritual being here in this human experience. So knowing this, I honor all people. I honor all religions. I honor all stories. But I honor those who use the deeper, more loving truth of their teachings. I realize that there are many people in the world who are abusing the religious stories and the religious traditions and the religious rules. I do not condemn them. I simply give them no power. I focus on the truth and give no attention to the lies. I am grateful for all that I have been given. I am grateful for the mind that I have to make decisions. I am grateful for the heart I have to love. I'm grateful for the spirit I have to be open to life in the greatest possible way. And I am deeply grateful for every moment of my life, knowing that the power that I have is everywhere present all the time. So where I am in this moment is the moment and the place I can use to transform my life and transform the world. This is my truth. I accept it and I embrace it and I release it into consciousness, letting it be so. Join me in saying, and so it is.